Halflings, it has finally happened. We have merch!
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The crowd does indeed go wild. We have been working very hard behind the scenes to make some excellent merch for you all, which is available to pre-order right now. Some of them will be available from the 3rd of October and the others from the 1st of November. We wanted to do this in time for the holidays so that if you know someone who maybe enjoys a bit of Three Black Halflings, you can get them a Christmas present or indeed for yourself. It's also a fantastic way to support the show. You basically have like a Unati pack, by the way, a Unati stickers pack.
It's true.
Pretty awesome. Unati stickers pack. I like this.
It's called the Suffer and Learn sticker pack, but originally it was called the Unati sticker pack.
Okay, good. I'm happy with the Suffer and Learn.
We liked it because it's like, then it's quotes.
Instead of just pictures of Unati's face,
several different expressions.
Yeah. It's weird because this is not a video show. You know what it is? It's visualizations of the audio track, or like Unati's audio tracks from some of her finest episodes.
Yeah. It's just the blocked out lines where she's peaked her microphone from laughing.
Exactly.
So the merch that we have available, we have a yellow collage hoodie, which has a mixture of designs and phrases from the show. The Three Black Halflings t-shirt, which has got an amazing design and the words Three Black Halflings. It looks so nice. I'm very happy with that one. Then we have the Outlaws and Obelisks poster. You can order a physical poster. A beautiful, gorgeous poster of Outlaws and Obelisks. Then we have a pin and then two whole sticker packs.
I have a question.
Yes.
Does this pin definitively answer the question of the official abbreviation for Three Black Halflings?
I think it does.
Because
yeah, I think it maybe it does. Yeah.
We've been saying TBH. Should we swatch? Should we start selling swatches?
Should we start selling swatches?
We have to tell about the deal with swatch. The Three Black Halflings Swatch Watch.
But, you know, this is one of those things that has evolved over time. We're forming our brand identity, and I think 3BH is just a little bit better.
We have officially become a corporation.
We are a huge corporation with Jamal at the top.
Jamal is pleased.
First critical role, then us.
There is also a tip jar on the store. If you would like to, you can give us a tip, and some of the proceeds will go to the amazing Jonathan Charles, who made the music for Outlaws and Obelisks. As when you donate to the tip jar at any level, you will be able to download the music that Jonathan has made for Outlaws and Obelisks, and it is absolutely incredible. Like, you will want to listen to this
good.
Without us all talking over the top of it, because it's so so good.
I listen to it for fun.
Yes.
Like, it's, when I'm on planes and stuff, I'll just play the songs over and over again on a
because loop. They're so good.
This is a true fact. Because they're real good.
They're really good.
Excellent tunage.
And some of the stickers I'm very, very proud of. I really think they look so badass, and I can't wait to slap them all over my office.
I love the Poochie Rat Bag sticker that is extremely late 90s.
Yes, it really is.
It is extremely late 90s.
Make sure you head over to store.dftba.com/collections/3blackhalflings. And if you would like to get yourself a discount, you can get 10% off if you are a patron on any tier. That is patreon.com/TBHalflings.
Woohoo!
Head over to all of our social medias. It will be plastered all over our social medias for a long, long, long time, I'm sure. But please support the show, buy some merch. It means a lot to us. And it would be really, really, really fucking cool to see some people, take some pictures. It's some Three Black Halflings merch. I'm so goddamn excited. Well, let's get into this week's episode.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Hello, Halflings! It's me, Jasper William Cartwright, and I am joined today by
Jeremy Cobb, but Taylor Lewis calls me Marv Collins.
Marv Collins? What's that a reference to, Jeremy?
It's a reference to the very first Facebook page that I ever had.
Do you call yourself Marv Collins?
Yes. I didn't want most people to be able to find me. So I told only a select few.
Everyone search Twitter for Marv Collins. Everyone. Go now. For it. Go.
Marv Collins' Facebook, I think, still exists. So no. If you want, you can go.
I mean,
it
isn't impossible to delete your Facebook, I've found. Like, I'm pretty sure I've tried at some point.
Also, I don't even remember how to log into the Marv Collins Facebook. So, Marv
funny.
Collins does still exist out there. Marv
Is
Collins.
Is it Marv, just like M-A-R-V?
M-A-R-V, yeah. M-A-R-V Collins. Yeah.
Marv
oh, wow.
Collins.
He only has 11 friends.
Do you have a picture on it or not?
Yeah, it's my dog.
God.
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragon.
Full prince vibe? Woof!
This makes them even more black!
Cake glitches and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
No!
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
Yeah. We're about to get into something real big now. Oh, that's you, the little pug?
Sort of. That's not a pug. That's he's allegedly a half Shih Tzu, a quarter Lhasa Apso, a quarter Pekingese.
I have a mutual friend with Marv Collins. It's you!
Yeah. Allegedly a half Shih Tzu, a quarter Lhasa Apso, and quarter Pekingese, but he really looks more like a Tibetan Spaniel, if I'm being honest.
Sorry, this first post from 2010 from Marv Collins is the most Jeremy shit I've ever heard.
Yeah, it really
is. The people
is.
In my driving school can't spell library in quotation marks. This is a problem, full stop.
That's funny.
This is so funny.
Bro, there's one that's just a Tenacious D quote. Be you angels? Nay, we are but men. That's all it says.
This is so great. This is so funny. Oh, man. This is so great. I'm going to add Marv Collins as a friend. I know you won't be able to accept it.
Yeah,
but
if I could, then I would accept it, but I don't know how.
I'm making the request. I love the idea that you're going to somehow find a way to log back into Marv Collins now and after this episode, and you're going to have like hundreds of friend requests from random TBHs.
Oh, there's like old pictures of me. As well.
I can't see those because I'm not a friend, which is a shame.
Oh,
I wish I could.
Yeah. I'm glad because some of these shouldn't be public. They have people's names. Not that they're embarrassing, it's just they have people's names in them, and I wouldn't want, like, now that we've told people to go look it up, want them to go see this and see actual people's names who never asked for this.
Never asked this kind of spotlight.
Yeah, they never asked for this exposure.
This is a problem. It's genuinely, this is a problem with a full stop at the end, like a very, like a slightly passive aggressive full stop at the end. Genuinely is like such a Jeremy thing.
That wasn't passive aggressive at all. I don't think I'm a I think people misinterpret me as being passive aggressive. That's just me being very straightforward. Also, I didn't know that periods came across that way in text
sure.
at the time.
You didn't
I
understand
learned
the subtle nuances of yeah. No, I think what I meant was a very finite period at the end of the sentence. Like it's like this is a problem, and like I will not be swayed from this is what I meant. Like I will not be swayed from
definite.
This point of view.
Yes.
It's very definite. That's what I meant, as opposed to passive aggressive. It's a very like definite, just like this is the statement.
Yes, I very firmly believe what I have just said.
This is a problem that no one can spell the word library.
Honestly, though, like, dear. Bro, these people were like all in high school. That if none of that, like, that's not good. Library is a word that people learn how to spell early on. That's like first, second grade.
Yeah, I have days where I can't spell, because I have this weird thing with my dyslexia where like I'll have days where like my literally, well, not even days, it's like more like little like 5 second spells where I suddenly go like like I just completely bum out and I can't remember. Like literally I got stuck the other day trying to spell the word four. I was like,
oh dang,
why can't I? And it's really
like
frustrating. It's quite like No, no, no. Like literally like four, as in F-O-R.
Oh, wow.
But like it, the way my brain, it's like I have a brain fart and I just go,
Was it like
what?
P-H-A-W-R?
That's what I mean. Yeah, I was sitting there going, is it a P? No? Is it a... And then eventually I'm like, obviously, and I'd fine, I carry on. But it's like, it just happens sometimes where I just randomly go, I can't spell this. This is really weird.
Yeah, it's really,
really weird. And it literally is like a brain fart. Like, it literally is like a moment where I'm like, I know how to spell this. My brain is just not putting the neurons together to tell me what I need to know. It doesn't happen that often, but when it does happen, it is weird. It is very, very weird.
It must be kind of jarring.
It's super jarring, man. It's super jarring. Because I don't class myself to be an unintelligent person. And forgetting how to spell a three-letter word is quite a scary thing. You're like, fuck, what? This is not okay.
Especially, like, the fact that it's, like, very basic vocabulary. And
that
every
it
once
only
in a
happens,
while...
It generally only happens with, like, very basic vocabulary as well. It is only on, like, super basic words. Like, where it's, like, three letters or something. And it's more like I doubt myself. Like, I might write something and be like, that doesn't look right. Like, it's like, it doesn't feel right. Something's wrong with that. I need to, you know, it's very odd. Anyway, we're not here to talk about my spelling. Thank God. Because that would suck as an episode. And I don't think anyone would want to listen to it.
Hooked on phonics. talking about Jasper's spelling.
But speaking about spelling... like magic spells, like I'm gonna, kind of, anyway.
I knew where it was going, but it's...
Yeah, anyway. I should have just gone with speaking of spells. I probably would have been better as a segue, because, you know, that would have been better. Like, speaking of spells...
I think that would
be
very
today
effective.
Going to be talking about reskinning things. We're going to be talking about our experiences of taking existing systems, whichever system that may be, but we will probably be using 5e because this is the one we know the best and that is the one we talk about this show.
I've only run one other system.
I've
done two. I've technically done two.
I've
played Pathfinder, but I think nobody really GMs Wander Home, but like you kind of co-run it.
Co-GM,
So I've technically run that, and I've run Paradox Perfect.
And so, yes, we'll be talking about how to... And I guess this kind of will be a little bit of a homebrew thing as well. Like, we can kind of combine it with a bit of homebrew
flavor
stuff.
In a lot of ways, too.
And I think, yes, and that's one of the key words I was going to say. It's how you flavor things differently. And I think, Jeremy, you raised a very good point off mic. So I think we'll start there, I think, as just a point of conversation, because I think this is an interesting one. Do you want to like reiterate the point that you've made?
Yes. This has been, a contentious issue for a lot of people because, let's be real. This actually relates to a conversation that was happening on our Discord recently where people were talking about how people will be like, I play TTRPGs, but the only game they've ever played is D&D. And specifically, like, 5th edition. Where it's more... And people are like, yo, there are so many other TTRPGs out there that are also really good that are in many ways, like, nothing like D&D. Like, Wander Home has very... Mechanically speaking, has very little common with Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah.
And honestly, even in terms of the intent of the game... for a lot of D&D games, there'll be very little crossover with Wander Home and plenty of other TTRPGs. And the point being that there are all these other systems that can perhaps accomplish the thing that you're trying to do better than 5th edition can, or better than D&D in general can.
Yes.
So if you're like, I want to run a game that's all about cooking. And it's just, and people just cook food, and it's like we're experimenting with new kinds of recipes, but we don't want to actually do that in real life, because we want it to, so it's all just it's a TTRPG cooking simulator.
I half expected Unati to jump into the Zoom then and be like, yes, I'll buy it, and just throw money at you,
yes,
just because
she
heard cooking TTRPG.
Yes.
I think that might be like her happy place, where she'll never leave, like, she just play that for the rest of her life and do nothing else.
As long as she's allowed to run around and stab people with knives in between cooking things, I think it's perfect. And then
she has to defend her cooking pot from people that are trying to attack her whilst also cooking. I think that would be that would make it out extremely happy.
So yes, that is actually a very relevant point in a lot of ways. Like, yeah, not in some cases, depending on the type of game you're trying to run, it might honestly be a better idea to try and find another system. Yeah. Unfortunately, I am not very well versed in the world of TTRPGs at large, so yes. I can't make recommendations personally. Maybe that's something we can start trying to do on the show, is find more TTRPGs.
Yeah, I think we did do a little, we did an episode, didn't we, where we talked about other TTRPGs, which was kind of fun, but we could definitely, yeah. I think we could do that, make that more of a regular segment, and maybe we could even get people to pitch us some, and we can get them to send us like a, maybe, you know, send us a little voice note or something where they can be like, this is why you should do this, and we could play it, and, you know, we could talk about it. Yeah. And I agree, and I think that my only thing is, and I think this is just generally like a thing with internet discourse, is like, but it's also okay if someone just wants to reskin 5e because that's the system that they know. And like, that's ultimately the main reason why I do it, is that I know 5e so well that it makes doing this probably easier for me and more accessible for me and my players than diving into a whole new system in which I may or may not get the required outcome.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Or the outcome I require. Do you know what I mean? Whereas I know exactly what rules I can break or manipulate or mold or reshape, etc., to fit the thing that I want to do versus trying to adopt a whole new system. And that's not because... and that's not any knock on another system or anything. That's more of a knock on my time and my just my ability to engage with like a new thing. As a lot of the time... I'm always trying to engage with new stuff and whatever, and actually, like, it takes a hell of a long time, and like trying to
you would need to run multiple games probably in that, or at least to really get to know it well. Yeah, to get to play it a bunch, or get to play it at least once.
DMing when you haven't played in it is really hard. Like I find, I even now wouldn't have a clue how to run Pathfinder, and I would not. I am not the kind of person that could just pick up the Pathfinder rulebook and become a good DM. I'd have to play it. Like, it's just, I find it super duper duper hard. I'm actually trying to learn a TTRPG, actually. No, I say this. I'm actually trying to learn a TTRPG because I'm going to be running it, running a game, and I can't play it because it's like not really out yet. So I'm like, I'm having to do that at the moment, and I can tell you it's stressful and hard.
Does the game that you're running use Powered by the Apocalypse? I cannot remember.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Completely different. From
utterly
D&D.
Different.
That's one thing I'd really like to watch some of those games being played, because that was actually how I really learned D&D, was from watching Dimension 20.
Yeah, and you absolutely can. There's some great people. That would be a fun thing to do, actually, to find some other TTRPGs and then shout out some other shows which are playing in those things. Because that's one of the best ways to learn, I think, is like watching and listening to them being kind of played. Because you kind of learn a bit of like, oh, you learn like the secrets. You know what I mean? You learn like, you're like, oh, that's how you can do that thing. Cool.
Yeah, you see it in application, and you see tips and tricks from those people actually doing them. But anyway, that's not, we're primarily looking at reskinning in D&D, because sometimes you're only trying to reskin one or two things.
Yes.
And it doesn't require you.
Or it's for like a session, right? Where like you're going to like a parallel universe or something, right?
Yeah.
Like,
or it's like Wagadu, where it can still, I would say you probably could make Wagadu work better with some other systems that are less combat focused.
I think definitely. I think it would definitely be better in like a Powered by the Apocalypse or something where it's more about like sway and kind of like, you know, there's more like dense like social interaction systems, etc. Because I think that it would be really fun in that scenario. Maybe even something we should
I was just thinking to myself, maybe we should consider that for future Wagadu stuff that we do.
We can, even if we did a bit of a hybrid, you know, and we included some of those, like, you know, like, because I think actually someone on our Discord, and I apologize who it was that I can't remember, but I seem to remember a little while ago someone put together a little PDF on like interacting with spirits, which I thought was
Gift of Gabes. I think it was Gift of Gabes.
Well,
they tend to do the most homebrew stuff and I think they do a ton of, they love Wagadu. So
amazing.
And I know they're very active on that. Sort
and,
of
I, and I think that, you know, that stuck out to me. I was like, oh yeah, there probably kind of should be like a subset of rules for that specifically, because I mean, hey, look, that goes in a whole heap of shit multiple times.
Yeah. I think that may have been what motivated it. I can't remember though, but I think
episode
of two problems that you guys had
trying to navigate the,
I think that was what inspired it anyway.
And plus also, Just one last point on this before we actually move on and get into the mechanics of this is I also do think that the we're just talking about accessibility here, and I do think that for a large part, because people majority of people have played D&D 5e in some iteration, if you're doing a show or if you're presenting something, like if you want to, like unless you're doing like a full Kickstarter or something, like reskinning is probably the better way to get something out there right now. Like if I wanted to release like a module that I was reskinning a lot of stuff in 5e to like release, it's probably still better to do it in 5e because more people would probably interact with it than other stuff. And that's just like the situation. Well,
that's why Twin Drums chose D&D 5th edition.
Yeah, precisely. Just because it's more, you know, more people engage with it and play with it and stuff like that. And I think if you'd have made it a different system, then less people probably would have done so.
Like drastically. You are reducing your audience drastically.
Yeah.
Unless you're already connected, like the game that you are learning how to run, famous IP. Unless you're already connected to an IP that people will want to engage with, you're really cutting your audience if you're going with something that's not as well known.
But
to the actual point.
Yes.
Jasper, do you want to start by telling some of the reskinning stuff that you've done in the past?
Yes. I would love to. So I think just to kind of preface this as well, a lot of the stuff that I've done, I've tried to do or I've tried to create facsimiles of existing stuff. Like that's always the way that I start. So actually, this is my process generally. And then I'll talk about some of the things I've actually made. The process normally.
Let's define what reskinning is.
Okay,
I realize we've been talking about reskinning this whole time.
Yes.
And no one, if you're not familiar with the term, you poor souls.
We are talking about taking the skin off of something and putting a different skin. What is it? Mike Myers? Is that the murderer who does the, you know, Halloween?
Oh, you're thinking of Leatherface.
Leatherface, that's the guy. Yeah. That's basically what we're talking about.
Yeah,
it's
basically taking an existing item or thing in like a TTRPG. In this case, D&D 5th
edition. It could be anything, like a setting, a class, a subclass, a weapon, whatever you want it to be.
An item.
Yeah.
And also, a lot of it's also reflavoring, but it's basically or retooling. And basically just like, okay, I'm going to, because reskinning is essentially taking something that exists and calling it something else.
Yes. We should make the differentiation between reskinning and homebrewing, right? Because reskinning, ostensibly, you might change one or two smaller elements, but generally you're keeping it the same and you're just kind of calling it something else.
Yeah.
Whereas homebrewing is like more like you might have a basis, but then you kind of move quite drastically away from the thing that you've based it on and you've created your own thing.
Yes.
Is generally the way to do it. And I think the reason why reskinning is an interesting conversation is purely because it can... Just in terms of the context of the types of items that you can then start to pull together, you can then start to get that same kind of imbalance or weirdness happening that you would with like homebrewing, which is what I will get onto now, which is like, so for instance, I think that one of the easiest ones to talk about is like sci-fi or even like modern day D&D 5e, right? Trying to reskin D&D 5e to fit like a modern day or a sci-fi setting. And my first advice is always like, always check out DM's Guild. DM's Guild is an unbelievable resource. There's some great people on there that have made some truly, really fantastic stuff. I'm not saying you have to use whatever's on DM's Guild, but it'll probably give you like a really good springboard and a really good idea of like, you know, if you've got like a very specific idea, the chances are there's something in the general ballpark on DM's Guild because there is just so much content on there. It's amazing. And hey, like if there isn't anything on DM's Guild, then all the more reason for you to reskin stuff and make it and put on a DM's Guild and share it with the world. And so that's generally where I would start is like have a look on DM's Guild and see if there's anything that's kind of like close to it and then have a little perusal of that and then be like, oh, cool, there is some stuff that's close to it and that's like a good idea and that's a good idea and I'm going to take that and then I'm going to throw the rest of it away. And then I generally would then look through for like the closest facsimile of a thing and be like, oh, what's the closest to what I'm going to achieve? And this is where there's like a slight difference because sometimes I'm looking at like what is mechanically the closest and what is like flavor-wise the closest.
Mm.
So for instance, if you're going to take like stuff like, I don't know, even like guns, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're probably looking realistically, if you're looking at, like, balancing, you might want to flavor your guns to be more like bows and arrows in terms of mechanical reasons if you don't want to make them overpowered, because a lot of guns will be like 2d6 or like a d12 or whatever it is, like, so they can be pretty powerful.
Like 2d8 for a revolver.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
so it can
insane.
Be
insane.
So, like, if you're running, like, and again, it depends on the kind of campaign that you want to run, and this is why I think we're going to talk about this in the context of, like, getting that balance right, because let's say we're doing a sci-fi setting, and you're starting off at level 3, and you've kind of got everything is relatively the same, but then you give level 3 characters a 2d8 weapon, that's going to be...
Yeah.
They're going to mow through everything, or they're going to get mowed down real quick if everyone else has got revolvers. Which
your bad guys revolvers.
But that's maybe, like, maybe that's the world that you want to be in. Do you know what I mean?
Like,
don't get
validity.
Wrong. I think that, you know, if you're going to run a modern setting, that's the kind of modern setting I would want to play in. I want to play, like, if we have guns, guns could kill people. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, guns are, like, they take you out. Like, they land a headshot and you're out of here. So, like, you got to be careful. Like,
it is kind of the point of guns.
It's kind of the point of guns, exactly. And so I think that there is then, so that is something that you need to bear in mind. So there is a mechanical... There is a mechanical basis from which you want to reskin something, and then there is like a flavor basis that you might want to reskin something. Because let's say a samurai sword, again, oh no, samurai sword, like a lightsaber, for instance, you reckon probably like a flame tongue sword is probably the closest facsimile. But again, that's 4d6.
Yeah, that's insane.
You know what I mean? That's a lot. So
that's a
you probably
lot
want to then
damage.
Go for maybe you want to go for a greatsword or something instead, or a or even a rapier. You know, does a d8? Because again, if everyone has them, then it kind of balances out, right? And then I'll talk a little bit about, I guess, some of the things that I have reflavored. So I reflavored, we did the amazing one shot that we did with Eric Silver of Join the Party. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Join the Party. And that was pretty much just whole reskins. Like, that was mostly 99% of that stuff was just reskinned. I had a couple spells which were from a UA. Mm-hmm. That was released, like a Modern Magic UA, which technically I guess was more of a homebrew thing than a reskin. But even then,
it was made by Wizards of the Coast.
Yes, but yes. Yeah. So I'd say between that and then Tovo are probably like the simplest versions of reskinning that I do, in the sense that, like, I completely ignore the language of the spells when I cast a spell as Tovo or the influencer.
Like this, not the language of what the spells do, but just how
not
it
the
looks.
Mechanical. This is what I mean. This is the flavor. This is the flavor version, and then maybe we can talk about the mechanical in a minute, because I think that that's a slightly more tricky subject. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the flavor, like, that one is, for instance, I think I've used it at this point, but, like, you know, I've Hunter's Mark is like a little mosquito that goes out and, like, injects a little tracer kind of thing into them.
Too.
Oh, do I? Sweet.
Yeah.
There we go. That's out. You've listened to that, hopefully. Yeah. What else? There's
Find Steed is now you apparently just finding a camel and granting it sapience.
Yes, by giving it a little implant in
you like
head.
Give it a brain implant on its head.
Yeah. I honestly think that has been genuinely one of my favorite parts of playing Outlaws and Obelisks, playing in that one shot. Like, I really, really enjoy that, because I think it gives, and this is one of the things I think is one of the biggest pluses of reskinning, is, like, I really feel like it gives me so much agency, you know, as a player. And I know it's only flavor, so it doesn't mechanically matter, but, like, it feels fucking cool. Like, the whole point of this thing, right, is that we all get to imagine these badass characters and whatever. Like, it gives me so much more authority over my character and the style of them. And, you know, I love the idea that Tovo's kind of, like, a bit rusty and a bit kind of, like, everything is, like, looks cool, but it's also, like, it's, like, a bit broken or whatever.
Yeah.
Like,
it's supposed
you know?
Apocalyptic.
Yeah. Like, you know, the little tracer mosquito is, like, a little wind-up. I think I described it as, like, a little wind-up kind of one of those kind of, like, little things.
Detect Magic is, like...
it's my little wand.
Like a little wand rod thing that you take out. Yeah. A metal detector, basically.
Yeah.
There's There's a lot of, I think, yeah, it gives you, actually, one thing I wanted to say is the Artificer class is the only one that in the actual published version encourages you to reskin and reflavor spells.
Yeah.
Because they're like, well, artificers, when they use their magic, it often doesn't even look like they're using magic. It just looks like they're using their tech. And so it encourages you to personalize how your artificer does their spells. But I think what we should be, what we can encourage here is, hey, you can apply that to other spell casting.
Yeah.
Or even martial classes, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
I did that. I've done it a lot with barbarians.
I was gonna say barbarian is the exact one. I remember we did, which is again now out. Shout out to difficulty class. We did that one shot with Trevor and my character in that was part barbarian, but doesn't fly into like a foamy mouth rage. I called it blood fury was the way I reskinned it, and effectively it was like they get into such a like calmness of like mind. They get into such a one track, like I must overcome whatever is in front of me, that they kind of get blinded to like everything else. Mm-hmm. And that felt like a really fun reskin because it completely changed the dynamic of my character, who was like a very calm, very kind of like grumpy, like old guy. You know what I mean? I don't think would have worked if I suddenly went and just got really like foamy and just angry. It would have been so silly. So I think it definitely enabled me to play a very different kind of character in that scenario, which I really, really enjoyed.
I'm thinking of two different barbarians that I've played, both of which, actually, I'll say three, because there's three different barbarians that come to mind. One was BG426, who was an ancestral guardian barbarian. The premise is that he was built by one of the NPCs in the game to be his personal bodyguard, but he was the 426th attempt at building an effective bodyguard, hence the 426. But his power, like when he would enter his rage, he's entering battle mode, and like all of his ancestral guardian abilities were him activating leftover powers from like previous models. So like that's where the ancestral guardian comes from. All of his ancestors were just previous models in the BG, the bodyguard line. That was really fun to play. One of them, very recent, actually also an ancestral guardian barbarian, I'm playing in a Stranger Things campaign. And my character, his name is Lamont Daniels. Basically.
You always come up with the blackest names. Dennis Coldspring. What was it? Like Lamont, did you say?
Lamont Daniels.
Like, this is the blackest names. Like, if there's any question as to the race, the coded race of Jeremy's characters, you only need to go as far as the fucking name. Hey, I'm Lamont Daniels. You can't say that. Like, hello there, I'm Lamont Daniels. It just sounds like, it's just like, that is not a white dude.
I took the name of Daniel LaRusso from The Karate Kid and swapped the La to the first name and the Daniel to the last name. And then I was like, okay, he's Daniels. That works as a last name. And then Lamont. Cool. Lamont. We'll go with that. So he's Lamont Daniels because he's kind of inspired by the underdog who becomes
strong. Is his
strong.
Middle name Trayvon? As well?
No, but his dad is named Cedric. So his dad is named Cedric Daniels.
Daniels.
Which, if you're a Wire fan, you just smiled internally, probably.
Or just smiled like a strange person, as I often do to podcasts when I listen to them. I just like, I laugh, and then I realize that no one else is listening, and I'm like, oh, shit. Sorry. I look like a crazy person now. Whoops.
And also, you realize that you just, you're not actually around anybody, but you just said all of that out loud
to no one.
And you actually have lost your mind.
Wow. This is not good.
Lamont Daniels is like a nerd who used to get bullied, but then he had like a huge growth spurt, but also like he decided to beat everybody. Like, he was inspired by like Rocky and other characters like that. So he went to the gym.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers. Aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Him and just got jacked. So he's like on the football team and he's this huge kid and like he defends nerds and stuff. So that's like where he's the guardian. And so like when he goes the ancestral guardian ability where like when you attack someone, they have disadvantage on attacking someone other than you. That's basically just him getting in somebody's face, like using his football training and just like, oh, come on, come on. And like trying to get them to look at
me.
Yeah. And then I have a character named her name. Actually, she's from the campaign that Yelkash used to be in.
Hey-o.
Her name is Velveteen. Nickname Velvet Lop.
Yes, I think you've spoken about Velvet Lop before. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What's Velvet Lop again?
She's a wild magic barbarian.
That's
and
it.
All of her wild magic abilities are reskinned as her summoning the fae spirits of her legendary ancestors. So, like, her, and there are, I took, like, famous fictional rabbits. And because the idea is that she comes from a long line of, like, epically famous fictional rabbits. Or I guess they're real in this context, but like, so Bugs Bunny is one of her ancestors, for example. Another one is Banicula. I forget which power that is, but Banicula, the vampire bunny. One of her ancestors is Basil Stag Hare from the Redwall series. One's the White Rabbit from Alice in Wonderland. One's the Rabbit of Carabinog from Monty Python. One is Peppy from Star Fox. So she just starts doing a barrel roll. One of them is Rabbit from Winnie the Pooh, who cultivates
a
garden.
Roll.
Yeah. And then, one of them is Miyamoto Usagi from the Usagi Yojimbo manga. He's a samurai rabbit.
Sick.
Yeah.
Very cool. These are very cool.
And it makes her so much more interesting. So like her rage is her being like, woohoo, yeah. She's like not even mad. She's like, yay, because she wants to earn legendary status alongside her family by performing great deeds. So her rage is just her like fighting spirit getting fired up and just like, yeah, all right.
And I think this is one of the interesting, you kind of like nailed it for me, why I think reskinning is such like an important thing to do and why I'm like really, you know, I really wanted to encourage people to do this episode and encourage people to do it, because you'd be so surprised at how quickly you can make something feel truly unique and truly your own. And that's both as the DM and as the player. If you just reskin things, and like, I think it's a way that you get around having multiple of the same class in a party and making them feel very unique and very different. like, when I think of, parties of like all monks or all bards or whatever mm-hmm. it may be, you know, I think quite often reskin a couple things and suddenly they feel wildly different. Not only that, obviously they have different subclasses, which can make certain classes feel extremely different from each other. Yep. But it just gives you the extra ability, I think, to make it feel a bit more unique. And so I guess maybe we should talk a little bit about reskinning as the DM. We touched on a little bit of reskinning as a player there, actually. So it might be good to talk a little bit about.
Do you want to hop in first, or shall I?
Why don't you kick us off this time?
I'm trying to think of specifically something that I've reskinned and not homebrewed entirely from scratch. I had stuff in my brain, but it left during the discussion that we were just having.
Well, how about I give you a minute to think about that, and we'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back after this message. And we're back. Do you want me to kick us off, Jeremy, or have you thought of something?
Sure, yeah, if you want to. I'm still trying to think of, like, reskinning, what's that? Like, my brain has just gone mad. So I'm like,
You've had one of the brain farts that I have. cool. So, yeah, I think reskinning this, I do a lot of reskinning from, like, modules and stuff, which is very fun. I think I've spoken about this before on the show. I really enjoyed the Wild Map book, and I really enjoyed just being like, hey, I don't want to have to generate every fucking thing, but I also want it to feel like my own, and I also... want to change things around. And so I usually take a lot of like towns and cities from existing modules as like inspiration and like story quests as start off points and stuff like that. Like I'll just lift that stuff straight out and then just reskin it to fit my world. And that usually is just a case, and this is very simple. It's just a case of like, okay, what races exist in this town that wouldn't be there in my game. You know, if we're in a particular area of the world, there wouldn't be any Kenku or whatever there because of X, Y, or Z. So therefore, I'm going to like, you know, and even that I think is like a very, very simple thing, which I'm sure a lot of people are doing anyway, but it's just a really, really, really nice way of saving yourself a lot of time as a DM, where you kind of also don't have to worry about your players either having heard it before or been there or whatever it may be. Because quite often, I'll lift from shows as well. Like if I hear a cool thing on NADPOD or Critical Role or Join the Party or Transplanter or whatever it may be, like I will absolutely then like take that thing wholesale, put it in my game and just reflavor the hell out of it to the point where I feel like my players couldn't recognize it. And most of the time they don't, because Jeremy has played in my home games, and I know that Jeremy listens to stuff like Critical Role, and Jeremy's never come up to me and been like, hey dude, was that just Port Damali from Critical Role? I mean, it was. But, like, I just called in enough different stuff. I used a few of my own flavors that you didn't realize. all art is theft, is what I'm trying to say. It's a well-known phrase. And
You've suggested this whole episode just so that we can talk about your rampant... plagiarism in your D&D game.
I would like to stress that this is very much for home games when I don't have enough time to plan things. This particular instance, but even so, I actually didn't. We didn't do dissimilar things when I did the NADPOD one shot, because again, that was a lot of trying to. How do I take existing stuff and make it work for, you know, for being small? And so, for instance, I took like the wild magic table and I reskinned that to work for, I was like, okay, can I throw in some like small based flavor for this? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, so just like a lot of the things I'd established is like, oh, like this thing appears. And instead of like this thing appearing, it would be like an ant or something. But an ant is still like the size, like they could ride an ant. Do you know what I mean? Because they're really small. So it was just about basically making it fit into the world that I'd created. And I think that's generally the big thing with this for DMing is just like find a way for this to fit a... find a way to make something fit your set of rules and change whatever then like needs to be changed. But don't like, feel free to take the easy option though. that's what I think I'm saying here.
Yeah. It's like, you don't have to completely mechanically redo something. You can just take the thing and just call it something else.
yeah, this is what we were saying earlier. It's like flavor versus mechanical reskinning is a different thing. We'll get onto mechanical reskinning, I think, shortly. But do you have anything that you can that you've reskinned?
Yes,
from the DM's perspective? Yes.
So I think the most reskinning that I've done is in the gothic horror noir setting that I run, which I'm definitely going to have to bring onto the show at some point because I do love it.
Yeah, for sure,
But there was basically a little bit of background there because it's like drawing from gothic horror. There's like a whole thing of this guy discovered. Basically, it's like a weird version of the awakened spell. Basically, people figured out how to use magic to augment creatures, and so they referred to them as augs. And so, like, you'd have awakened creatures, but then people started to take it further and give animals more and more powers. Some of these got way out of control and the creatures escaped and were these monsters that caused huge amounts of damage. And eventually the government was like, cool, so we're going to outlaw this. It is extremely illegal now.
This is a no from us. Thanks for the input, everyone.
Yeah, a strong no from us.
It's a strong no.
We're not going to allow this anymore. We're going to kill all of the existing ones. You're not allowed to have them. But, you know, you have the rumors that some of them escaped and that people may still be making them somewhere, and they may be in the sewers. And there was a session where one of the parties that exists here was going through the sewers, and they encountered I think it was a half raccoon, half like frog. I think a half raccoon, half frog.
A raccoon
is definitely
raccoon,
I know what it was an Otyug, which is like a trash monster in D&D. It's an aberration that eats trash and is like telepathic, but in this version
it's a little trash puppy.
Yeah, except in this version, it was like this horrifying psychic raccoon named, I think, Bill, who was living in the sewers, surviving on filth. And Bill wanted death. He actively wanted to die because he was like, I was just a raccoon and now I am this monster and life is pain.
No.
Life existence is pain.
That's so and sad. So
he'd be attacking the party and every time they'd attacked them, he'd thank them.
Oh, God.
It was like really disturbing, but God. Everybody was laughing so hard. Just how sad it was. He's like, yes, thank you. This is what I wanted all along. Free me from this pain. And because he's like, I think it was like he also had uncontrollable hunger. And so he couldn't stop himself from attacking them. It was wild.
That's very sad. Reskinning monsters is one of the big ones.
That was, actually. And no one knew what that was. I can tell you that. There was, I just saw, this is, shout out to my friend Taylor who plays in that game. He plays a character named Shriek, who's an assassin, and Shriek, I forget how, but he has a bunch of like fake identities that he uses. Shriek is a bird. Shriek is actually just his actual name is but people just call him Shriek.
I need to clip that. That was such a perfect bird noise.
Thank you. All of his alternate identities are puns on basically the one that I just saw was Paul Blartimus Fowl. Which is an amazing, it's an amazing fake identity name for a bird man. Paul Blartimus Fowl.
I'm basically just picturing bird person at this point. That's effectively
he's a Kenku. He looks like a Kenku.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. I've done a lot of I've done a lot of reskinning that way, of like reskinning monsters.
Yes.
And actually an example of reskinning that people, it just sort of kind of happened this way, but and it's also sort of reflavoring, but happened on the show. Ooh. Was in the Strahd two shot that we did. I, as a bard, rather than performing music for the most part, I would literally just play songs on my iPod. And that was like how I was accessing my magical abilities.
Yeah.
Was like summoning magic through my enjoyment of music.
Yeah, that was so good as well. Like that, I think it worked purely because of your encyclopedic knowledge of certain genres of music. Like it was kind of obscene how well and easily you were able to recall songs at like the exact song for like an appropriate moment. And it makes me deeply sad that copyright law is an issue, because I would have put every single one of those fucking songs in that in that edit if I could have done. But we'd have got told off for sure. Like, there were so many songs.
Oh, thank you.
But it's very, very cool. Should we talk a little bit about mechanical reskinning as well? Because I think this kind of goes into, let's say you want to turn a longbow into a laser rifle, you know, for a particular thing. I think the biggest thing that I would say in this instance is that you need to think about the way that I think about it is I tried to be really simple with myself. And I said, like, what is one property that I would want to give to this reskinned item to make it work, to make it feel like it works? And I set myself a limit of like one, because you could easily reskin a lightsaber and be like, okay, so it can do this and it can do this. And if you do this thing, you can do this. Like, I think like those things can arise situationally and your player might present that as an option. But generally, you can then be like, oh, okay, yeah, that would kind of work. I don't necessarily think you have to have thought of all of that stuff beforehand. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In the same way that we do with regular weapons or regular items or regular settings all the time. Just like there's an element of, and I just wanted to warn people at the top that it's very easy to get bogged down into like, yeah, but technically, like, if the lightsaber was to be hit on the hilt or the whatever, and this gem came out, then it wouldn't work.
And also, it could just cut through limbs.
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
And just lose a limb.
Exactly. So, but in saying that, though, if there is like, you want to give it one particular ability, that's usually the cutoff I say. Because I think generally in D&D, unless you go into the awakening items that have come out in the Wildemount stuff, generally everything has like an ability, like a thing. Unless they're like one, like, you know, legendary wondrous items or something. They have an ability. So that's always what I try to do is like, so, okay, I want to make a laser rifle. So, and Jeremy, feel free to pitch in, by the way, if you have any, like, you know, how you might do it or
yeah. Oh, I was just thinking about the lightsaber. You could take
Let's go with the lightsaber, actually, because that one's nice and easy.
Maybe a longsword.
It needs to be a versatile weapon, I think, because you'd want to, like, the option of, because I think that there is enough people that use one-handed and two-handed lightsabers, and like the different stance.
I don't think two hands would make a difference with a lightsaber. I think it's just, which actually at that point you're saying mechanically it's just better to have two.
True.
Unless you say that two makes it harder to use the force.
That's the thing. I think two would make it harder to use the force.
And maybe you have to have a hand free to cast spells, which in this case is
using the force. Yeah.
So
yeah.
if you have two of them, you can't cast spells, but you can do a bunch more. And I would say instead of slashing damage, it should be radiant.
Nice.
You should do radiant damage. One or two hands should not matter, because it's not really about. It's not really about how hard you're swinging it. Most of the time, it's still going to mess somebody up.
Yes. I think, so we're saying radiant damage, and it's a 1d10?
Could have it be 1d8. Like, it's like a rapier.
Well, yeah, rapier. So then I think, okay, so what would like the one ability be for
with a crit?
You?
I think with a crit, then somebody has to make a con save or something to potentially risk having a limb chopped off.
Whoa, that's cool.
Which still makes it really strong.
That makes it, very strong.
That makes it very, very strong.
I think like, a low DC, I think. I would make it a low DC. Unless it was like, unless we're making this a legendary item. I think it depends on whether I'd be saying a lightsaber is going to be a big deal to get in this campaign, or a lightsaber is going to be, and this is exactly the kind of conversation you need to have with yourself, right? You need to work out, like, where is the power level going to be for this particular item?
And at this point, it becomes homebrewing. We're just fully homebrewing a lightsaber at this point.
No, sure, but I think that's why I said we were going to end up getting into homebrewing at some point anyway.
That's the question is then, do you introduce a parry mechanic?
That was what I was going to say. That my one ability instead of the dismemberment was going to be a deflect missile type reaction. Yeah,
you definitely would need that if you wanted to feel like a lightsaber.
Yeah, so that would be the one ability that I think I would give the lightsaber. Because I think then, like, after that, what I might say is, like, okay, let's say you're going for... Maybe you've got a fighter class. I might then see if we could reskin one of the fighter abilities to, like, increase your ability to use the lightsaber. You know what I mean? Like, maybe then one of the lightsaber abilities could be, like, once per day on a crit, you can attempt to dismember your, you know, or land some sort of, like... whatever it is, blow on this particular thing.
I think it should be tied to whatever it is you're using to operate the lightsaber, which I think should probably be dexterity rather than strength.
Yes,
even though in some versions, I remember reading that like in the Star Trek lore, or not Star Trek. Oh my god,
Star
goodness.
Trek.
in the Star Wars lore,
the lightsaber is supposed to be coming for you.
The lightsaber is supposed to be like really heavy and hard to control, and like that's why Jedi are the ones who use them, because they can operate them using the Force or something. I don't know. I feel like I would just ignore that because it's not like the movies talk about it.
Yeah, and I also just think like if you watch a
Finn
lightsaber
picked
fight,
up
it's
a
quick.
Lightsaber and used it fine.
Yeah, it's quick. It's quick. It's snappy. It's not like.
They're also weighted really weirdly. If you think about it, because they
it would
the
be
blade
really
has
hard
no
to use.
Weight.
Yeah, it'd be really hard to use.
Yeah, which is honestly why it is such why dual wielding is such a bad idea. Specifically with lightsabers, because since there is no weight to the blade. Unless you are looking at both blades at the same time, your body cannot tell where they are.
Yeah, you're going to cut something off.
Yeah,
for
like,
sure.
Even, like it's very easy to hit yourself even with two actual blades. But like if you're holding something, you can feel which way it's pointing by where. Like obviously, you know where it's pointing if based on the positioning of your wrist. But you can also feel with a real physical object, you can feel the weight.
Plus,
so
also if you swing a sword even at a good velocity at yourself, you're probably not going to generate enough power in that, like, you know, like if you were just going to bring it round the side of your head, you're not going to generate enough power to like cut your own head off. Whereas
you could seriously injure yourself, but you're not going to just
lightsaber would
rip.
Just whoop straight through and you're gone.
I saw a video on YouTube
there's a really funny meme of General. There's someone did a General Grievous
General
thing
Grievous just
where he gets
up.
Out like 1,000 lightsabers.
Yeah,
it's like, and he gets all these ones out and then he like starts like swing them all and just cuts himself to smithereens.
Just disintegrates.
It's really funny.
I did see a video once of a guy trying to dual wield swords in like his backyard and almost cut off one of his fingers. It was really bad. He had to like go to the hospital.
Jeez.
But like if that had been a lightsaber, that dude has half a hand now.
If he's lucky. Then you've got to drop the other lightsaber, hope that doesn't bounce and chop one of your legs off. It's real hazardous. Lightsabers
in real
are
life,
real hazardous.
Just don't the lightsabers. There's a really good video by I think Shadiversity on YouTube about what lightsaber combat would look like. And because it's all about like because you don't need to swing hard.
No, poke.
You just poke. It would be like it would be like fencing, but like you stand trying to keep the rest of your body as far away from the opponent as possible and like just try and it'd be a lot of like
it literally would be like fencing in the sense that like you score a point by like just touching your opponent with no real power, because literally if you touch their chest with the lightsaber, that's it.
Also, there would have to be a guard.
Yeah,
it's if there's no guard and you're fighting another lightsaber user, your lightsaber hand is going to get destroyed.
Yes, you need a light. You need a guard and not the one that Kylo Ren has, because I think that there's been enough... I mean, you only take one look at it, but there's also enough videos out there that prove that that lightsaber guard would not help in nearly any situation.
Slide. It just goes
because it slides down
fingers.
And it would just cut your hand off. It's such a bad design. It really, really it looks dope. I won't take that away, but it's a terrible design.
Okay,
anyway.
Okay. So for this, I think there is a Star Wars 5e system that would be worth looking into, but
I do believe there is, and I would genuinely love to play that.
In fact, I have it on good authority that there is.
Yes,
been told
yes.
Yes.
We definitely have been told
that
there is.
We actually know that there is.
Yeah.
But if I was going to do this, I would probably make lightsabers a prestige weapon.
Yes.
So that most, they're rare. Only Jedi have them. Or Sith. Or somebody who has killed one.
And I would genuinely say it's hard to gain a proficiency. Very hard to gain a proficiency. Mm-hmm. And there probably would be at least one, if not three tiers of light, like at least two, if not three tiers of lightsaber, in that like a training saber would probably be a thing.
Oh,
because the training sabers are like
those exist in Star Wars.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like the green, like because they like they're like hot, but they like kind of like burn you. Like it's like singe kind of thing.
Yeah, they hurt.
Like
you,
it would
but they don't
kind of it would
you.
Still suck to get whacked by one, but like that realistically probably would do like on par damage with like a normal sword. In that like you get hit, you get clubbed by one. Because the thing is. And this is, I think, again, a good kind of comparison with in terms of reskinning stuff, is that like swords generally in a sword fight will not slice through you.
Yeah.
Like that's not the design of a sword. They are like a bludgeoning weapon
well,
and a
cutting.
Piercing weapon. They could. Thing is, it's kind of like unless they caught open. Flesh, like if you're fighting someone else who's armored, it's very unlikely
like
that you're gonna like
in a full
cleave
suit.
Into someone or like you know what I mean. Like they could absolutely cut you, but even then, that's like the tip of the sword.
Yeah,
that's like a very direct kind of you know.
Then now
cut.
We're getting into sword history. Swords were not designed to fight armored opponents.
Yes,
they're like or not like heavily armored opponents. So they
yeah,
are
like,
they
the
are
mace
supposed
for.
To be able to slash. And, like, you could theoretically, I mean, it's going to be hard to hack through a whole limb, but you could, at the very least, you can get cut very easy with a sword. Like, if somebody hits you with the blade of a sword, it's going to slash you.
It's going to cut you, yes.
It's not going to lightsaber go straight through you, but unless you have a lot of protective gear. But, yes. Actually, there's, did you watch the movie Henry? I think it's Henry.
Henry.
Starring Timothée Chalamet.
Oh, the king
or is
one.
It king? It's king,
king Henry.
Not Henry. It's king.
It's called King, I think.
Yeah, it's king, not Henry.
Not Henry.
I knew it was.
I was
about
like about
king
the
Henry
Hoover.
V.
Is it a movie about a sword wielding Hoover?
No.
I don't know. Do you have Henry Hoovers in America?
No.
Do you not have Henry?
No.
Yo, it does feel like a very British thing now I think about it. Like,
the fact that it's called Henry as well.
It's so weird. Like, it's such, like, they're such good Hoovers as well. Like, I just want to preface this. Henry Hoovers legitimately are the best Hoovers. They're so durable. Like,
yeah,
they've really
it's
got
a
great suction.
The home of the Henry vacuum. It's myhenry.co.uk.
They're
UK. I bet it's named after the guy.
Yeah, well, everything's named after the guy. But they're so good, though, Henrys. They really are. They've got a little face on them. Anyway.
Okay,
King.
But anyway, I would say they use the murder stroke. That's what it's called. The murder stroke. Which is, this is in real like combat. People actually did this when they were fighting a heavily armored opponent using a sword. Rather than trying to hit them with the blade, they'd grab the blade themselves and bash them with the hilt.
With the hilt.
Or
they would
short sword, or excuse me, half sword it, which means they'd have one hand on the hilt and then one hand on the blade of the sword. And so they'd have more control and try and jam it into the gaps in their opponent's armor.
Yep.
So the murder stroke, which basically turned your sword into a bludgeoning weapon, and then half swording, where you're trying to be very precise with your stabs and also put more power into it because your whole body is now just...
This actually raises a really... I'm very glad you gave this example because this is a great example. This is something that I would allow and I would encourage DMs to allow that you, if say you came up against a thing which had resistance to slashing damage, but not to bludgeoning damage, like it works.
Yeah. Murder
it
stroke.
Definitely works. That you could, if you had a long sword, I'd let my barbarian flip that sword round and you know, like have at it. Do you know what I mean? Like that. I 100% would allow that. I think it's kind of cool. I think it works in the context.
I would lower the damage die. I would lower the damage die.
I don't know if I would. I don't know if I would.
Because otherwise it's just, well, my sword does exactly that. Because the sword isn't designed for that. Like, it shouldn't, for example, a long sword whacking you in the head should not do as much as like Warhammer.
Or Warhammer, sure.
Which is designed for puncturing armor. I think that should, like, so that I could see knocking it down to a D6.
Yeah, but I'd keep the proficiencies and everything like the same.
Still let them hit people.
Yeah, okay, that's cool. That's a nice reskin of something, which I think which I think works. Yeah, we got one in there at least. There was one good thing.
Yeah, and honestly, the lightsaber thing is interesting because you essentially come up with a lightsaber combat system, or you just do what Star Wars, like, or it's like that your AC is part of that. So you do the monk thing and have the AC, rather than being tied to your armor, be tied to your actual skills.
Yes.
And your force abilities or whatever. So, like, you're not wearing armor, but it's like, if somebody does... So, a Jedi would have high AC and could have, like, a parry ability to raise their AC against a sword blow. So, they have the reaction. Or they have the deflect missile. I guess parry can do either. I guess the idea is, and then if you actually similar to the monk, if you spend a key point, you can, or a force point, or spend some force power, you can deflect the bolt back at the person.
And I think, we'll just stick with this to sort of round up some of this reskinning stuff as well. Just like to give a few examples of ways that you could. Ways that you could potentially reskin a thing to like fit a Jedi, for instance. Like, I feel like maybe casting like a message on someone or something and then doing the little hand wave, you know, or suggestion, sorry, and then doing the little hand wave. That's what I meant, sorry. You know, that could be like your Jedi mind trick. Catapult would probably be a pretty sick way of doing like a force, you know, throwing objects or whatever, or that could be kind of fun.
Force push could be like thunder wave.
Thunder wave, yep. I think that you could easily as well reskin.
There's a force pulse. Who uses it a bunch of times?
Yeah. I think you could easily reskin as well, like Firebolt, say, as a cantrip, as a force push, and change that to bludgeoning damage.
Yes.
That's probably what I would say.
Or force damage, just straight up force damage.
Or force damage, yeah. Of course. Yeah, obviously, I forget that force damage is actually
Pulse Wave,
a thing.
That's the name of the spell. But yeah, force damage.
Is there anything that would... Is it like Thorn Whip or something that could move the enemy?
Yeah, it can pull them closer to you. Maybe if you change the damage type
and make it move them away, then you could say have Thorn Whip as a reskinned ability instead of force push.
If you wanted it to just be shrapnel that you just fling at somebody and it explodes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or like a flechette canister just going that through. You happen to have.
Shocking Grasp if you're a Sith.
Yeah. Shocking Grasp can either be like you are using the force to try and overwhelm them by firing all their synapses, or you're just a straight up Sith shocking this person.
Yeah. And like instead of XP as well, you could just have Metachlorians. Like, you know, you could just.
Oh, your Metachlorian count raises?
I know I've just really triggered some people and I need to duck and hide.
I'm not a fan of midichlorians, but I'm not as hardcore against them as some people.
And literally as I was making that joke, I was like, oh, I'm so glad this is a podcast and people listen to this after the fact and not with me. Because someone would instinctively launch at me if we were at a live show, just without control of their body.
Like, just dropping.
And then afterwards they'd be like, I'm so sorry, I don't know what came over me.
They hate you forever after that.
This is another thing, actually, I want to talk about real quick. This is a thing which I thought was worth reskinning, worth thinking about in terms of reskinning, which is that I quite often hear the argument, they're looking right at the door. There's no way that you could possibly sneak past them. Mm-hmm. Because of the way that the like stealth is phrased in like D&D, etc. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a really good example of reskinning, which is that stealth doesn't necessarily... Stealth could be like no one notices you or no one thinks that you are a threat.
Okay.
So you walk in, but you manage to...
It's one of those...
You blend in kind of thing, right? Like they think, they're probably supposed
crowd,
to be
here. Yeah. So you're not like actually crouching. You're just like...
Yeah. You're Assassin's Creed-ing it. Fuck, it's just Christian Bale turns up and provides a distraction for you.
He just goes, walks.
Jeremy, can we play a game in which I have like a familiar or something and it's Christian Bale who just turns up and causes a distraction so that I get advantage on a stealth check? He just walks into any scenario and goes, da, 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 da.
Or sings the Powerpuff Girls theme song. Oh, good for you!
Good
like
for
whenever,
you!
Whenever you succeed on a check, as a familiar, he like dies or is dispelled or whatever. He's like, you and me, man, we're fucking done professionally.
We're fucking done. We're fucking done professionally,
man.
So funny.
You're a nice guy, but...
But, wow. so, yeah, the point I was making is this is basically like Assassin's Creed, where you, like, sit on a park bench and no one notices you as the guards walk past. Da, 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 da.
You're just sitting there, like, da, 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 da.
Da, 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 da. Just minding your own damn business. Oh, man, that will never not be funny to me. It will never, ever not be fucking hilarious to me.
Can you imagine being on set and you, like, you get the giggles? Because he sounds so silly.
Could you imagine being on set with Christian Bale and getting the giggles would be the most stressful experience of my life. Imagine if Christian Bale was in The Butterfly Lion and it would be like, if you can feed him. And Christian Bale's the director just hardballing you.
You're just up there trying to say your line. I'm like, da 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 da.
All you have to say is, if you could feed him, you could take him. Da 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 da.
Then the lion comes out. With da, da, da,
then
da,
the
da,
lion
da.
Comes out. That's all it's going to be. The lion comes out like, da da da. Oh my God. Anyway. This has followed the pattern of Three Black Halflings. We've descended into fucking
complete
chaos.
And I don't think any of the times we've explained this joke, it's ever made it to the main feed.
People probably have no context for this. If you're
go
not a patron,
listen to the Christian Bale rant from the 2009 film Terminator Salvation. If you haven't heard it already, I guess if you're like a Zoomer, you may not have heard it. It's like. It was, if you're a millennial, there's a very good chance you've heard it. But if you haven't, basically, he's getting really mad at a guy named Shane Hurlbutt, who was, I believe, the lighting designer for the movie Terminator Salvation. Christian Bale was doing some kind of really emotional scene or something. And Shane moved like somewhere, not in front of the camera, but Shane basically adjusted a light. And in the middle of the scene.
I think he walked across and adjusted a light.
Yeah, and Christian Bale lost it. And somebody recorded it and released the recording. So there's just an audio recording of Christian Bale still in his like John Connor accent, screaming at Shane Hurlbutt. And at one point he's like, I'm here doing this scene. And there you go, like, da 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 da. And during the very first kickback, we started laughing about that. And it is every time we do this, it just keeps coming back.
For instance, if you wanted to do a Christian Bale build, you could instead of Thunderwave, you could have him screaming, da-da-da-da-da, and that's the Thunderwave.
Yeah, his rage is when somebody ruins his take.
Yeah.
And then he's a bard barbarian.
Who thinks that they're in the middle of a film, and when something doesn't go their way, they lose their rack completely.
Just completely lose their mind.
Just completely lose their mind. I have a quick thing as well, which is also, go and check out the Miyazaki rant about someone tried to make some procedurally generated like monsters, and tries to show it to Miyazaki, his reaction is genuinely one of the most painful things I have ever seen.
Is this
seen.
When he was like, anime was a mistake?
He basically says, like, he literally says in the meeting, this is an affront to humanity. And that's one of the nicer things he says. It's like, and these are like some interns that have made this. And
oh,
they
I have
look
seen this!
Crushed.
Hayao Miyazaki! Bro, that guy reacts
crushed.
So bad. Yes,
it's bad.
I strongly feel that this is an insult to life itself.
So yeah, there's that. But this actually loops me back around to make one final point, which is actually there is some nice reskinning that happens in the season two of NADPOD with this is a very mild spoiler for like the first two episodes, I guess. But the way that they flavor Henry's shadow, I think, is quite an interesting little reimagining of an Echo Knight, and the fact that it's kind of almost like a little, it's got personality and stuff like that. And the tenuous link was is that I found that Miyazaki quote via listening to a short rest.
I'm looking at it now. The video, brutal. I've seen this before. Basically, from context, folks, I'll just describe it. His employees, I guess, people at the company, I think, are showing him like a demo of basically like procedurally like generated. It's like a monster that moves using its head. So it's supposed to look like really creepy and horrifying.
Unearthly kind of thing.
Yeah, this could work really well. His response is, well, every morning, not recent days, but I see my friend who has a disability. Which is already like, oh no.
Oh, boy.
It's so hard for him just to do a high five. And so it's basically, he immediately relates it to like it just reminds him of his friend who's disabled, and like, oh man, that's brutal. I am utterly disgusted. If you really want to make creepy stuff, you can go ahead and do it. I strongly feel this is an insult to life itself. And there's just a shot of the guys sitting there in silence, their poor faces,
just like, oh man, it's bad. It's so bad.
This giant an animation, one of the most beloved animators of all time, and influential animators of all time. He's old school in that he takes all this real seriously.
Real seriously. And, he's made some pretty good stuff. So, I mean, you know,
yeah, it's worked out
he
for
can
him.
Be a grumpy old man about it. I don't mind. It's fine.
Did you see what he said about his son's movie?
Oh, God.
His son, I forget his son's name, but his son got into animation and made a movie. Mm. And he was not positive about it. About the film at all.
That's very funny.
Yeah.
And anyway, on that note, we're no longer talking about reskinning stuff.
I was going to say, if you want, there's a lot of reskinning in, or at least, certainly reflavoring. There's a lot of very heavy reflavoring in Outlaws and Obelisks of rage. I don't think we get into it really that much in the season, but possibly I think we may talk about it in one of the campfire chats where Johnny talks about the heavy reflavoring for Budge, who's a druid barbarian combo, like multi-class, and how that like where that comes from for him. Also, just the way that Connie reflavors and like all of Hoosier's spells.
Oh, so sick! So sick!
And like,
check that out. You
the
need to
spell
check
book
out.
Is now
so
a scroll,
amazing.
And it's really, really cool.
It's really, really cool. And then Tovo reflavors. I think I reflavored everything.
Heavily reflavored, heavily reskinned, all that stuff. And then, there's some reskinned animals in there as well, reskinned creatures and monsters. There are monsters that are combinations of pieces of various monsters that are like existing monsters. I just took attributes from multiple things, stuck them together, that kind of stuff. Yeah. All sorts of different things.
What we're saying is go to Stalos and Obelisks.
And you'll hear a lot of this in practice where it feels like a Western and we barely had to do much to change things.
Yeah. Really, really, very little. Very little. And I don't think anything feels underpowered or underserved, which is kind of nice.
No,
so
and I don't think
good.
Even the guns don't feel under... I don't think the guns feel overpowered either.
No.
The guns feel... They're very strong, but they're not like to the point where they're just an unstoppable
force. There's no point
force.
In having anything else or sort of... You know what I mean?
Yeah, because Lula does some work with that bomb axe, man.
Jeez, Lula does some work.
Does some work!
Mm.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Anyway, folks, that is enough for this week. I hope that you've enjoyed this. If you want to get more TB Halfling stuff, we've mentioned it a lot already, but you can go ahead and check out patreon.com/TB Halfling. You can also find us on the social medias at TB Halflings. And don't forget that we have merchandise. You can get your hands on Theme Feedback Halflings merch now via our merch store. The link will be in this episode description. Thank you so much for listening. So long, Shire folks.
Da-da-da-da-da. We keep bringing it back like Tenet.
I hate you.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.